Hello and welcome to another edition of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com, part of the Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007, and hosted on Hiveworks at thehiveworks.com, where you can find a great assortment of great comics that you can enjoy at thehiveworks.com. I'm Fess of archercomic.com, and with me we have Kelly Turnbull of manlayguys.com. Welcome!
Hello!
And a special return guest this week is Jules Rivera of ValkyrieSquadron.com. Welcome back.
You.
What was the last time we had you on, I think, was the fifth anniversary special? Did we have you on then?
I believe so, yes. A few weeks ago, I recall.
Okay. And with that, I think we ended up trying to figure out who had been on the show, who was our biggest returning guest, is what we were trying to figure out. And I know that Jules was on there several times.
Oops. I think it was on about three or four times.
And I actually did go through the archives and try to figure it out. And I'm just clicking back. I'm stalling as I'm clicking back through the archives to actually find the answer. And what it was is, I think I said, if I don't count anybody that is a regular on another show on the network, because it's, I don't know, otherwise Melissa would probably be out on there a lot. But let's see here. I have, excluding other network shows, I do have Melissa Kircher on here, who is actually part of the First Issue show. But that's a video series, not a podcast. So she's been on the Webcomic Beacon podcast 9 times. Alex Hebeling has been on 8 times. Jules, you've been on 5 times.
Oh.
And then Yamino, Megan Rose Gedris, and Benjamin Rodriguez have each been on 3 times. So.
Now I'm like number 4 on that list.
You're third. You're third.
Oh, number 3. Oh. That's still pretty good. Wow.
But you're in the really fun episodes, like the anti-Valentine's Day one. Hey, actually, we're getting pretty close to that.
Yeah, we are getting close to that, unless this episode comes out after that.
Yeah.
In which, basically, it was we were brought back. This would have been our second year bringing back the blind date that was created by, I think it was created by Xavier Xerxes of ComicsTalk.com. And then I got permission to sort of bring it back, where we put artists and writers on blind dates with each other to create a Valentine's Day comic or strip. And I still have to draw mine. But as of this recording, I have to draw mine. I better have gotten it up by now. And also, Steph from Sarah Zero is running his Valentine's Day sex drive, which we've been trying to get him on the show, but he has twins he has to take care of every once in a while, and that hasn't happened yet. So I'm not sure if we'll actually be able to get him for anything, but basically it's a sex drive. You draw naked versions of your comic characters, and then you link everybody who else is also doing it. So it was pretty big last year, and there's a lot more people this year, and so we're going to have a lot of naked people. And but this week, we're all going to be talking about the absurd comic. And what I mean by the absurd comic is where absurdity is almost the staple, the driving force of the comic itself, where because it's absurd, you're going to react, because that's how comedy is. It's when something in your brain doesn't line up correctly, and your reaction is to laugh because it doesn't make sense.
Someone told me once that laughter is a reaction to being uncomfortable with a situation. Like, naturally, it's sort of like, if you can't fight or flight, then, you know, you laugh because it's like a tension reliever kind of thing.
Mm-hmm,
and so, like, if you're expecting something to happen a certain way and it doesn't, like, if it's just like, you know, you're totally not prepared for like how a joke ends or something, then it's like you just get that like little burst of like, I'm uncomfortable because I wasn't prepared for like how this was going to go, and it makes you laugh. That was the,
I've never heard it like that before, but that's interesting.
Yeah, that was some lecture we had in college.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's not so much that there is a punchline at the end, so much as the punchline, so to speak, the end reveals that the joke is basically everything that happened before it. And then you realize, oh, it's a duck and it thinks it's a person sort of thing, or it doesn't quite, it's not really a joke. It's just the situation and things around it are making it. And so I would cite like Butter Safe would be a good one to consider, as well as Axe Cop would be, where you have, you know, you have like, you know, a little kid basically writing the whole thing. So.
Greeting, Guten Tag. Much I really need.
Hang
to
on,
here.
Hello.
Check it up. What?
Hi. The power just cut out for a second there.
Oh wow, shit. I'm sorry for your clocks.
Wow.
Oh yeah, are you in the middle of that storm that's going on out there, or is that?
Yeah, I'm in the middle. I'm in the middle of a blizzard that's happening in Minnesota right now.
See, and that is why I don't live above the Mason Dixon line.
Yeah, I was gonna say we're it's a balmy what, like 80 degrees out here or something.
Okay, so where was I?
You were talking about Butter Safe and how the punchline kind of is something that passes you by. And
oh yeah,
we're touching upon Axe Cop.
Axe Cop. It was, you know, it's written by a little kid who doesn't, you know, they're not fully versed in how you actually, you know, do write a story. You basically got a good a connection of a lot of crazy ideas, more or less, that are being put together. So you'll have like it's a bunch of, at least when I was first reading it, there's like several jump stops where, okay, we're gonna go this direction now, and this, well, okay, we're gonna go back over here, and sort of, so it's sort of like the expectation of everything is being changed so frequently. And I think it's gotten a little bit tighter over the years, of course. I mean, that's just naturally going to happen. And I'll bring up another reference, which is really good for this, for the point of this. If anybody's heard of the John Freeman Full Life Consequences.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Now, Jules, do you know what we're talking about?
Sounds vaguely familiar.
It's like this YouTube video series that's based off like the best worst, Half-Life fan fiction like ever. It's like, yeah. John Freeman, who was Gordon Freeman's brother.
Yeah, it's there was a, it was written on LiveJournal, because I found the original LiveJournal when we did fan fiction for the Web Fiction World podcast at one point, and then somebody did a dramatic reading, which was on you're the man now dog or .com or whatever that site is. And somebody did like this really dramatic reading and tried to read everything straight. And then somebody took that, turned it into a Gary's Mod YouTube video where they went through and basically sort of animated everything in Half-Life 2, which ended up using the character of John Freeman that was played in this was taken from the webcomic Concerned, which was a Half-Life. It's kind of like this hapless guy, so it kind of like made sense. Jules, it's probably going all over your head right now, but basically it's sort of like snowballed into this, oh my God, this so much doesn't make any sense, it's awesome sort of thing. And also Latfox Tracks did like a couple remixes of the audio reading, which is pretty, it's really fun in a techno-y sort of DJ remix sort of way.
It's got some of my favorite like reaction pictures in it, just, you know, they're like, ha-ha, they laughed.
I gotta get you. We gotta get you the link for this afterwards. But
get me and the, you know, the link to you know, any other web comic beacon listeners who might not be familiar with this.
Oh, certainly.
Yes.
But the idea,
it's not just about me, guys.
Yes, that's fine. But the idea was, and also it's like the guy, you know, kept doing other chapters because, oh man, this is sort of cool. People like my sort of stuff. I think it was the guy who didn't, English wasn't his first language, I think is what it actually was. And so that's why some of like the grammar and the absurdity doesn't quite work, because there's, you know, there's like,
that kind of makes it better, actually.
It does. It's there's like also the lines, something about like the pants were singing, and the birds in the sun were almost down from the top of the sky.
I didn't realize until like this year that every time they were like, and the pants were dead, they meant plants. Like, I thought there was just some Half-Life, because I've never played Half-Life before, so I thought it was just like some Half-Life bad guy that was like walking pairs of pants or something.
No, but I do remember the spider with the gigantic scrotum.
All right.
Who could forget the scrot spider?
All right.
Maybe that was just an egg sack. I don't know.
All right. Well, we're going to move on from that. But the idea is that sort of like thing is like it became less popular the more that he made it, because it was sort of like this one sort of thing. Then it seemed like he was maybe trying to be absurd. And it's like, where is the comedy in this? Can it last? Because I was playing the XCOM Munchkin game, which it's almost built for. If you ever played Munchkin card game, it's basically absurdity in a card game where a lot of things just kind of don't make a lot of sense. But you got like crazy villains that like sock arm guy or whatever, an axe cop, and it just really doesn't make sense. I mean, it kind of makes sense within its own self, but how far can that absurdity just work before it's just like,
sort of when it becomes like self-aware, it's like, I mean, it sounds mean because then it's like you're laughing at somebody who's like trying to do it consciously, but it's like, I don't know, there's that jump between like just the innocence of just a purely ridiculous thing and then like, oh, now you know it's funny and you're trying to like catch that spark and you're just chasing lightning.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It was funny before, but now it's no longer cute. It's time to move on, sort of thing. And that's why I know some people don't like Axe Cop, because it's, as the kid grows up, I mean, is he self-aware of why it's funny or how absurd it is, or is he really just creative and he'll keep that? Like a lot of us web cartoonists, you know, that they start in like sort of like comedy. Like comedy comic sort of thing, and then we want to have like a more deeper storyline, so we start playing with drama and then you have some people that don't know how to do it right.
Oh boy, there's like 8 webcomic beacons we could have on people who just can't draw right.
It's one of those things that, like, I feel bad, like, you know, it's like, I totally have examples, but I don't want to be, like, singling people out because I don't like to trash talk other people.
Yeah, they know who they are.
I don't think they know who they are, honestly.
Hey, my job to fix their problems. They gotta fix their own damn trauma issues.
Yeah,
I'm not the damn writing teacher. Figure it out.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, when you, it has a lot to do with sort of, like, setting up the rules for your world, and you set up, like, a certain tone that people expect, and when you kind of deviate from that tone too much, it seems, like, out of place, like, you know, they don't, it's the same thing, like, if you had, you know, a Superman comic where all of a sudden, like, Superman could, like, talk to animals or something, like, you know, you'd be like, oh, I can't believe this anymore, and they're like, oh, well, you can believe that, you know, flying alien looks like a, you know, white European human, and it's like, well, they've set up the rules for the universe that, like, okay, there's, like, aliens who can fly and look like white dudes, but he doesn't talk to animals, that's not what Superman's about, and so when you do that, you've, like, that's not, you've broken your rules. And so there definitely are ways to do like a goofy universe and put something serious in it. Like, you know, Futurama did it really well in the 4th season when they had like the Fry's dog episode and stuff. And it's like, I think it's just, you have to kind of like keep the laughs coming. And
why'd
so,
you bring that episode up?
Cause it's like the best example of like a goofy, silly series doing something really emotional and like executing it well without making it seem like it didn't belong. Or like, you know, any Simpsons episode with like, you know, like the do it for her, like one with Maggie and like the flashback episode and stuff. Like, you know, those are all really good examples of like a goofy series that did drama well, I guess.
Because it doesn't violate its own internal logic. That's the thing. You set up a bunch of rules for your universe. As long as you continue to follow those rules and say, you know, your magic white alien guy doesn't suddenly magically have powers you didn't originally conceive of him to have.
Yeah, like
crap, you know.
Exactly, especially when
you will be okay.
I was going to say, especially when, you know, he discovers he has a new power when he like gets beaten to basically death. He doesn't actually die. He goes into like a sleep coma, and when he comes back out, he has a mullet, and he's like, you know, he's back. And
hate it when that happens. Wake up from a coma with a mullet.
Well, yeah, it's like, you know, there are ways to work ridiculous powers. You know, it could be like, oh, when he's like exposed to puce kryptonite, he can talk to animals now. Then it's like everybody's like, okay, that's a fine explanation. Like, it's if you just have to find a way to make your new thing work within the rules you've already set up,
right?
Although, coming back to the aliens imitating white guys, I'm pretty sure there's a really great series idea in there somewhere.
Oh man, I've totally
and especially
seen,
like, they don't do it very well. Like, what's wrong with that guy? It's the weirdest looking white guy I've ever seen. Man, isn't that like a really awesome idea in there somewhere?
Isn't that like Ford Prefect in Hitchhiker's Guide, where like they talk about like how he just looks kind of off to everybody and he doesn't blink enough and stuff like that? And,
yeah,
and his name is Ford Prefect because
like his face is just stretched on him as opposed to having a face.
I feel kind of bad, but when they cast what's his name, Martin Freeman, like the guy who's the main character in Hitchhiker's Guide and is like Bilbo and stuff. When they cast him, recently, because like I'd forgotten that was. Like, that was him in Hitchhiker's Guide, and when I was going back to look at it, I was like, oh man, imagine if they cast, what's-his-face, Benedict Cumberbatch as Ford Prefect, and he's got this, like, weird lizard face that just, like, doesn't look quite right.
That's mean. I do want to take a quick break here, just so...
I'm sorry, I've, like, taken this so far off
topic. No, that's fine. I just want to take a quick break here, make sure everything's in line, since of that power surge I had, and we'll be right back.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network. Follow us on Twitter at WebcomicBeacon. Email us at WebcomicBeacon@gmail.com. Or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We're also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction. At webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Oh yeah, that's right, he does.
Yeah, sometimes you do have sponsors here on the Webcast Beacon Network, in which you can go to webcastbeacon.com/advertise for more information about sponsoring a particular episode or buying ad space on our web zone. See how I rolled that in there?
Shazam, baby, I know how to sell.
Absolutely. Let's see here. We've got absurdity on our mind here. And with that, I don't think we can talk about absurdity without talking about referential comedy, such as Family Guy, since you guys brought up a couple of TV shows already.
True.
And, say what you want about Family Guy. It makes money. People buy it. Uh-huh. People watch it. Whether or not
love it.
Yeah.
Dude bro's like, man, you see Family Guy, this shit was off the chain, yo.
It's one of those things we always
awesome.
Or even like Robot Chicken, you know, in that same vein where anything almost any half of the things on Adult Swim. Where a large part of it is absurdity. Aqua Teen Hunger Force, where it's like, okay, we're going to have a whirling vortex and giant crab monster people this time that shoot.
Or the pixelated Moonanites.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
I think Robot Chicken is, like, a great example of that whole, like, absurd humor kind of comes from catching people off guard and, like, you know, like, giving them something they don't expect because, like, the funniest things on Robot Chicken that will make you laugh the most are always the things that are, like, 3 seconds long. You know, it's just, like, it flashes something at you and you're like, ah! And, you know, and those are the things that always make me, like, you know, it's the same with, like, SNL and stuff. It's, like, the shorter a sketch is, like, the better just, you know, like, a solid punchline it is. And then when they do kind of, like, the long-form things where it's, like, this is super goofy and it kind of gives you time to, like, get used to it and you can kind of expect what they're going to say next to, like, you know, every joke. And then it's, like, okay, this could have ended 5 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's also kind of the humor behind Portlandia.
Yeah.
Like, really wacky, unexpected crap. We can pickle that.
Well, actually, now that you bring some of that up, I'm starting to think now more about Kids in a Hall.
It's Kids in the Hall is like another Lorne Michaels one. It's the same, and SNL, you know, it's the same guy who produces like all three of those shows.
But well, Kids in the Hall you can find on Netflix, but a lot of that is also like it's sort of like the absurdity, and sometimes some of the sketches do go a little bit long, but sometimes that is also a joke where you. There's a guy I know. His name is Eric McEwen, and he is a local improv artist. And what I have been warned once when I was going to interview him and my landlord, my now landlord, Lemuel Pugh, who they did a webcomic together at one point, I was warned that he likes to work with uncomfortable silences, and he likes to make things more awkward sort of thing. So that is certainly a style.
Oh, and it's such comedy. An art form to know, like, exactly when it's enough uncomfortable silence. Like, I actually just watched a UCB grad show last night. A bunch of my friends are, like, improv comedians, and so they were having their show, and we went out to support them, and there were definitely, like, there's one guy who, like, that was, like, because they did a thing where it was, like, sort of they had, like, three sort of stories going parallel to each other, and they keep cutting, like, back and forth between them, and, like, the one was just about, like, some professor who's like imparting lessons to people by like not talking to them. And it was like really well done, but yeah, it's definitely like reading the room. Like when you have just enough uncomfortable silence and when it's like, okay, now the joke is dead.
Comedy's all about timing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've had a little bit of experience myself with some of that. I've been on stage a couple of times in front of an audience in which I was more or less a participant. I'm not like, an improv artist myself at all. But I have, been on a podcast with, Joseph Scrimshaw and, and I did link to that in one of the previous episodes. I was on his podcast called Obsessed, and I talked about my obsession with projects. I probably should have just said webcomics, but I said projects specifically because everyone that knows me knows I constantly make projects for myself. And there was like a lot of reading the room too about, okay, I know I'm working with like a really, really good local improv artist here. I gotta be entertaining and not be myself and just start really explaining things like I normally do. Because that's not really funny, but so there was like some give and take, and I had to work with that as well. And I was also on one on Joe's. He had like a performance, and he had grabbed somebody from the audience, and he was going to pretend to hypnotize. And so okay, I already knew some of the rules. Try to work with it, and not try to be as much me. There is certainly a lot of feeling the room that there's something really special about. Live performance, which is just really, really exciting. And then for me at least, the incredible embarrassment I have later when I think about what I did. with comics, it's because I'm trying to bring this back around. It'd be really interesting to see a little bit more stuff that plays like that. The closest you can get to playing with an audience would be for MS Paint Adventures. Or
I was just going to say, like, he could probably do that.
Yeah, or prequel for another one. Or even, you know, I would even go forth to say Tumblr Ask Blogs.
Yeah.
But that's kind of stepping further away from the topic of this particular episode.
It's so hard to judge like whether something is like goofy enough or not, like because I've totally done times where I've tried to be like, you know, it's just I felt silly and I do a comic that was like, you know, the punchline is basically like it's so absurd, like
yeah, you
know, like,
you might even say the punchline is machismo.
Yeah, that's but, well, and then I have like tons of people in the comments like being like, oh well, how does this work, because like what if, you know, it's like no, it's just like there was the one where like he time travels back in time to punch himself and take his coffee or something. I was like, ah, that's funny to me. And then I had all sorts of people like, well, why, like trying to reason it out. It's like no, you're killing the joke. It's dead, it's on the ground, why did you do that to it?
Internet nerds.
And it's so hard. Yeah. Like When you come up with like just a goofy like little stupid thing like that, and you know then you have to spend 10 hours drawing it and inking it and coloring it, and you're like, I don't even know if this is funny anymore. And I imagine it's like even worse for animation when you're doing like Robot Chicken and stuff, and it's like you had this like, this was so funny when we were just like, you know, candidly putting it together in the break room, and now it's like, oh, we're like 30 hours into this thing, is it really that funny?
A really good example for everybody to check out if they have Netflix. Go and look up 6 Days to Air. It's basically a documentary of the beginning of, I don't know which episode, which season of South Park, but basically they're coming off a break and they're going to start producing the first season's first episode. Not the first season, but
pretty recent, because it was like they were coming back from the Book of Mormon tour.
Yes, yes, that's what it was. And the episode that they were ultimately working on was the Human Centipede episode, with where basically it's a part of, if you clicked, if you accepted the iTunes terms, if you clicked accept, it's written in there that you would be part of an experiment to become a human centipede.
It's only a matter of time before they actually do that.
But yeah, no, it's things like that. And South Park is a really good example of, like, also just absurdity, to the point that, oh my gosh, this is, you know, it's not as much as the absurdity as the offensiveness for the South Park example, but, like, eventually it just became, oh, that's just South Park, you know, and nobody has ever really tried to do something like South Park really ever that had taken off anyway. And that's,
yeah, because South Park has had its share of imitators, but I just think there are a lot of folks out there who imitate but never really duplicate. Like, they just can't land the right amount of absurdity. It's too self-aware. Like,
yeah,
like,
and it's
talking about earlier,
it's so specific to, like, Matt and Trey's sense of humor that no one can, it's like no one else is Matt and Trey, so no one else can do like them.
Right. And so that's my concern. Some other people's concern too. No, it's like along the lines is like, can any of this last beyond what's already existing? It's like, you can only have so many gamer comics about a couple of guys sitting on the couch to talk about games in spite of all the imitators. You really can't. Will there ever be another type of web comic that's like Axe Cop, with that has that same sort of, like, that first time engagement? Will we ever get that again? Should anybody even try? I don't even think it's something that anybody can purposely try to recreate without being fairly obvious about that they're trying to recreate. You know, you got like these diamonds in the roughs, and then only a few of them will take hold. Like, you know, I like Buttersafe way more than any other sort of like minimalist style, sort of like, they're not really stick figures, but you know, that sort of very simple style, like Cyanide and Happiness, which I absolutely hate because I think all the jokes are fairly uninspired and anything a freaking little kid would think of, sort of, you know, very, I don't know, I won't go into that, but Buttersafe actually has a little bit more originality to it. Almost subtlety in originality, as well as playing with everything. I don't know. It's a lot better put together, and it's just not outright offensive because we're offensive and blah, 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 you know.
Yeah, anybody whose entire shtick for humor is, I'm offensive, and I said a thing that's going to offend you, that just is so very
interesting.
Anyway.
It was, like, my buddy's, like, 30th birthday or 35th or, like, some big birthday that they wanted to like, honor with, like, a roast of him. And, like, one of the, you know, it was a bunch of people that were all friends in this improv group. And so they had really funny stuff. And there was this one guy from, like, another improv group that I haven't seen as much. And he just went up there and he did, like, 10 minutes of rape jokes or something. And it was just like, oh, God, get this guy. Like, any laughs he got were, like, totally just kind of, like, the audience, like, sympathetically, like, you're dying, so please don't. I feel so bad. I get, like, it was just like, oh, get off the stage. Like, it's not working.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. I really want to do. I have an idea. Speaking of wanting to do more projects, I have an idea. I want to do a show where basically I just interview. Oh, hey. Hello, phone. Interview, like, interesting and creative people that would be, you know, like, I could spend several episodes recording short episodes of just interviewing improv artists here in Minneapolis. But, no, yeah, you know, improv is such an amazing art form. I've always thought, it's like, why doesn't anybody ever record any of this stuff and, like, put it online? And you really probably wouldn't get, like, the same effect.
It's like, yeah, the magic is kind of being there watching it happen and stuff.
Right. Though I still think some snippets would be fine, I think. I think...
Well, at the very least, snippets to help promote your comedy troupe so you can get other people to come to the show. Like, yeah, look at the funny thing I did. Whee! That was completely improvised. In your face! That was totally just called out of nowhere. See the show.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. How do you feel about, Fox is starting the X-Cop TV show that's, like, scripted by adults and, you know, voiced by, like, Nick Offerman and stuff like that? Like, it's going to be interesting to see how they take, like, you know, because, like, it wasn't even a five-year-old writing it. It was, like, you know, Ethan and his brother playing, and then he would take what they played about and, you know, make a story out of that. And now that's it's going to be, like... you know, Hollywood writers taking that and trying to make like a Fox primetime series out of it.
Oh dear. I am nervous about that for sure. Yeah. Number one, Hollywood writers. Oh no.
Wait, is this that ADHD thing? Is this that ADHD thing that I saw? There's like an animation of an X-Cop where it's all about like him going for Halloween candy or something like that.
Yeah, I think that was like a test thing. Like, I don't know if it was a pilot exactly, but it was like a proof of concept thing that they made to kind of like show what they wanted to do. And I think like since then, it's been picked up and it's supposed to be getting like a for real TV series now. Actually, there's I feel like I should throw it out there because we work on it, but, yeah, 6 Point makes, the X-Cop motion comic. It's up on like the Rugburn YouTube channel, and it's like for real, just the comics with like voice acting and animation.
Yeah, I've seen those.
Yeah. I wasn't sure how I felt about it. I don't think I liked that particular animation. I didn't like the animation of what was there of animation. It was way too choppy, ironically. But I don't know. It's really hard to think of that. It'd be interesting to see how X-Cop develops over the years. I mean, it's it had such a great welcoming. The crossover with Dr. McNinja was genius, and which I would like to. I would like to know how that worked out. If basically they actually really worked out together, or if it was like sort of like a pass off, and you had to figure out how to get, you know, you like a telephone where you get like this page, and then you got to make a new page, and then they have to take what you did in that page. It'd be interesting to see how that actually was developed the crossover. But no, I don't know. I'm not sure if anything else can come out where we're not going to either judge it very critically, or if it's just going to be like a short-term engagement sort of thing. I don't know. I would like to get everybody's, if people have like other opinions on this particular subject, certainly leave us a comment or email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. If there's enough content that we can have like either a rebuttal episode, it'd be something I would be looking to entertain. As in, I don't know, there can be a lot to discuss here. It's just like an off sort of thing, and we haven't done an episode for a while. I was like, hey, you know what? Let's try this and see what works.
Well, like, I remember in the X-Cop, like, print volume that came out, he's talking about how he has to, like, get as many of these strips drawn as he can before, like, his brother goes through puberty and kind of becomes, like, aware of what's happening. So it's like, you know, he's definitely, like, planning for that to happen, like, you know, the day when it stops being like a little kid being goofy and starts being like a teenager trying to be goofy.
Oh man, teenagers trying to be goofy can be painful.
I don't know, but yeah. There's also something to be said about facilitating a desire or a hobby in a young person versus if you have like a kid that thinks they really would want to play like guitar or a particular instrument, and that desire will eventually go away especially you don't get them any instrument. But if you sort of facilitate and work with that, I mean, it could quite possibly develop into that he would still become a really good writer in the future.
Well, yeah, but I just hope that, you know, in the future when, you know, if he decides that writing is what he wants to do, and, you know, he's been kind of fostered along in that, that he doesn't want to keep writing Axe Cop. Like, you know, I kind of hope he'll, like, you know, be like from something else that's like, you know, a new thing. Cause it's like, you know, I'm not drawing the comic that I was drawing when I was 7 years old and stuff like that. It's like, you know, you're like, all right, that was a silly thing I did when I was in like second grade. And now, you know, I'll work on something more, more fitting to like my new perceptions of like how writing works and stuff.
Basically, you don't want to be a one hit wonder to yourself. Yeah. You know?
Right, or you don't, or with that, you also don't want to be the person that's just sort of clinging on to your thing of the past.
It's like the comic,
like Star Wars,
like high school sports hero.
Yeah, that or Star Wars.
Touchdowns in a single game.
it's kind of why because I didn't inherit. I am like right now, you know, with Ardra, I basically am. I own 90% of it now, and I'm basically going to be doing all the future writing and such, with still some like ideas and suggestions from Jason, who created it. But we're working on like the last storyline that Jason more or less scripted out, though I'm changing a fair bit of it because of reasons. But like after that would be a large part of mostly me doing the storylines and even more so the scripting. I've already been doing editing and scripting for a couple of years now. And I basically what I wanted to do specifically was after this storyline, anything that would happen after this point, which I'm trying to develop as a, if the comic ended here, it would be satisfying enough. But I do want to basically do a time jump into the future. And really make that I'm not just trying to play off of the existing Ardra and the Ardra universe. I want to make sure that it's going to be a little bit different. We're jumping ahead to when they're different ages sort of thing. So it's that sort of, you know, in that same vein, I don't want to just sit here sort of rehashing everything. Of course, I'm getting a little bit of flack for going back and getting all the archive redrawn, but it's, none of it's printable, and I need, you know, well, you want to move from hobbyist to actually, you know, trying to sell it and pay the artist sort of thing.
It's like people make fun of Dragon Ball Z a lot, but I really think that they did. I mean, me included, I make fun of Dragon Ball Z all the time, but I really think they did a good job of like, you know, like they get to a certain point in the story and it's like, okay, everything that happens for the next 15 years doesn't matter at all. And they just like stop. Talking about, right, you know, it's like they jump to like, you know, Gohan's a teenager and Goku's been dead for like 15 years and like what's, and, you know, it's like kind of like how is the world different and what's happening, and that's where, you know, they just pick it up when the story is like relevant again. It's not, you know, you don't have to do like 10 seasons of like Gohan's kind of menial forest life and stuff before you actually like get to something interesting.
Yeah, that's That's the other thing I learned when I did my first webcomic, where it's like, I eventually learned you don't need to make the next strip happen immediately after the previous strip and include all this stuff. You don't have to try to force a joke into walking down the hall sort of thing. You can jump ahead a little bit here and there and such. So that was a very important lesson I learned.
It definitely is an art form. Figuring out like,
would we just be some slavish to the timeline like that? I don't know. I would pretty much any time I write a story, only the relevant crap gets put in there. You don't really see a lot of characters just sitting around eating breakfast unless there's a really awesome gag in there somewhere. But only relevant stuff gets in there.
Well, like it definitely is a challenge figuring out like where to put the time skips in so that it doesn't feel like it's rushed along and stuff like. I've noticed it so much where, like, in Walking Dead, it happened a lot where, you know, it's, like, supposedly, like, 2 years have passed or something, but it's just, like, you know, like, when did, like, the, I mean, I really like, you know, like, I think the Walking Dead TV show is doing a pretty good job, all things considered, but, like, you know, there's a scene, like, the last season ends with them, like, coming up on the crest of a hill and they see this prison, and then the like, this current season starts with them, like, actually getting into the prison, and apparently, like, 8 months passed between like them, you know, the end of the last one, the start of this one, because they talk about like how the whole winter happened and the woman's like ready to have her baby. And it's like, did you take 8 months getting over the hill? Like, I don't understand this timing. And it's like, if the time skip happened before the last season ended, like it totally didn't feel like 8 months had just passed. And, Batman, like the last Batman movie was super bad for it. Like, you know, there's supposed to be like, 6 months or something of him being gone while his, like, his back is healing and Gotham's, like, going under tyrannic Bane rule or whatever. And it did not feel at all, like, it seemed like Batman was out for a week, like, getting his letting his back heal, and, like, you know, it was like, Gotham didn't really seem like it was under tyrannical rule. It just kind of seemed like everybody was like, oh, the bad guys are being crazy and, like, you know, lock their doors or something.
Well, I don't know. I think it could have been a bit better done by showing some, not so much a montage, but some transitional stuff, some spikes in here and there. But I always was thrown for, like, when the movie started, it's like, wait, how long was Batman around that he's got all these, like, body problems with his knee and his back, and it's like, dude, how long have you been, like, stuffed up in here and you suck at business, apparently, and
like, until he got the leg brace to like help him walk again or whatever, like, I thought that he was faking that as some sort of, like, I couldn't be Batman because I have these knee problems or something. And then, you know, he gets that brace and was like, oh, that was for, like, what the fuck happened?
Yeah.
That's a really Batman-y thing to do. Faking a leg injury and playing the wounded gazelle gambit just in time to stab you in the face.
I mean, that whole thing had other issues too. Like, I totally thought, like, they were building up to Batman making some crazy, like, exoskeleton that he was going to use in, like, a final standoff against Bane, and then it was like, no, that was just a weird throwaway plot thing that really was inconsequential and didn't need to be there.
The first rule.
And then they just shot Bane with a gun. Spoilers, I'm sorry.
The first rule, the Batman lies. And with that,
we're always saying, like, Batman, I'm sorry I turned this into a Batman thing, but, like, that movie had so many issues that bothered me, but, like, you know, Batman's whole thing, like, you know, like, oh, I won't kill people, I'll just give guns to other people who will kill them.
So basically, Batman turns into the NRA.
Yeah.
And with that, we're moving on to our next break, and we'll be right back.
Popularity sense.
That was No Sense by Francis Collette, found at musicgalley.com by Mevio. Speaking about being topical, I'm also working on bringing back the Webcomic Beacon newscast. And it's basically going to be folded back into the Webcomic Beacon. We're going to try something a little bit different. Basically, everybody that was on the previous newscast couldn't continue, more or less, at the same pace. So a lot of things have to be working. If you're interested in being a potential for being a part of basically the Webcomic Beacon newscast crew, or the second crew of the Webcomic Beacon, you can send us an inquiry at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. We're going to be starting, we're going to record, I think, an episode mid-February, depending on when this episode comes out, and try to bring it back and see how it works. And a big important factor of that, of finding new potentials, is basically finding people that are going to communicate very well in email, and finding stories that they really want to talk about, sort of thing, as well as the chemistry and dynamics that would be on the show itself. So I will end up leading the newscast, you know, Webcomic Beacon episodes, and hopefully to hand it off to other people that can also hopefully record it on their own, and things like that. So I don't know, exciting times here, trying to try something new like we always do. So what? Hello? Oh,
yeah.
You disappeared there for a second.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just saying that I miss Roscott.
I do, but, you know, he had other things he needed to do, and that's quite understandable. Hopefully now, yeah, with the new style of what we're doing, just going through, we're going to be watching. I reconstructed the references because basically Jason and Eric were spending several hours a week gathering and researching and gathering links and such. So I've changed things to be like, okay, everyone can look at stuff, try to find stuff. If you see something that, oh, I'd really like to talk about this, versus just, hey, this is technically related. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, trying to make it more of a, let's have a real, like, discussion show versus just sort of, like, rattling off some stuff. Because, I don't know, I think it'll work better. I will enjoy everybody's feedback as we move forward with this.
Go ahead.
No, that was pretty much it.
Okay, I was about to say, we still haven't done the Fake Geek Girl episode, so that's something I'm just kind of waiting.
Oh, right.
I was like, oh man, this is going to be fun.
I wasn't sure. I thought Eric was trying to get a hold of you to do one of his, like, 5-minute video things.
Yeah, but I couldn't get around to recording, you know, the 5-minute stuff. My recording equipment here is really crappy.
Okay. We found time today to be on the show, but...
Yeah, because, you know, we're having a conversation, but, yes, you know, just recording myself in my own office, that's pretty much the only time I could do it is on a Sunday morning, because I have to share the office with my husband, and my husband works a real job here, which is often phone conversations and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, I just didn't find the time. Okay.
All right.
I'm a bad person if that's not a good enough excuse.
All right. I'm going to write down a note here, and we'll work on that Geek Girl episode thing.
Fake Geek Girls.
Fake Geek Girls.
There's a qualifier now. I really want there to be a Fake Geek Guys episode. Like, does anyone ever call out guys for being not geeky enough?
You know, people say that, but yeah, Patton Oswalt totally did a thing about, like, how, you know, like, how easy it is to be a geek now, and how people, you know, like, and he was talking about, like, he was complaining about, you know, kind of like the guys at the gym in, like, Boba Fett like t-shirts, and he's like, you know, you are a real Star Wars, and it was like very, like, kind of not like it seemed like he was being pretty straight about it. It was like, oh no, Patton Oswalt.
All right, let's see here. I think we we're almost done about talking, discussing news. Let's see here if there's anything else I have to do. Oh, I got so many things I need to do today. I've actually started structuring my time. Imagine that. Around me, working on basically everything that's Festworks LLC related. And that includes doing the comic and the podcasts. And yeah, it's a part-time job right now. And I think it used to be a little bit closer to 30 hours a week that I'd be working on this stuff. But I've actually decided to start actually scheduling times, which I'm going to work on this, I'm going to work on that. and this is when I'm going to sleep. And you know what? I've actually started getting better sleep. Got a little bit more energy. Oh, I would recommend anybody who's trying to do things like I'm doing, basically overexerting yourself with a lot of ideas and projects, is to make a schedule. It is so helpful.
I keep feeling like I should, but then I know, like, there are so many times where I'm like, all right, today is the day that I work on, like, X project. And then as soon as I get home, I just, like, pass out as soon as I, it's like, I don't even have enough energy to turn the lights out. I just get home and, like, fall asleep on the couch.
Oh, my Google Calendar is horrible if you try to look at it. Okay. So, let's see here. I think I'm going to have, I think later in February, I'm going to try to get together with some Britons, or at least some people from that area, for a language episode. And we're going to talk about, I think what the idea is, we're going to talk about swearing between English and American English.
I was just thinking of that episode, is that movie Euro Trip or whatever, where swearing is on a whole different level.
Oh my god, yeah. I think I've actually started watching episodes of British Gordon Ramsay Kitchen Nightmares just to watch him swear on that whole other level, because it's true.
See, I was never super impressed by... I was never exceptionally impressed by, like, English swears, because I was, exposed to, like, Eastern European swears, and it's like, they are, like, there's some Romanian one, it's like, it basically translates to, like, I will shit liquidly in your soup. It's like, that's amazing.
Wow.
Wonderful. So we're gonna try to do that.
See, that is worth an episode.
If this episode comes out before the 24th of February, email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com with some of your English swearing quotes and what it actually means and where it comes from, because we would totally talk about that. Wonderful. I don't know. Language is a really interesting thing, and we've had a few language-ish type of episodes. Kind of, really. Well, anything. If anybody ever has any really good ideas for a future topical episode of the Webcomic Beacon, feel free to email us and give us a good convincing reason or some resources, and then that will be more likely closer to if we're going to have that particular show. Because an idea is an idea, and I always had many of them, but if you can give me a little bit more meat to pull on, hey, part of the work is already done, and I will be more encouraged to do such a topical episode in the future as we move forward through 2013. And I'm still hoping to get that new website going. We ran into a little bit of issue with how I kind of wanted things, but Mike's working really hard on the new website, and I'm getting excited, and just want to make sure it doesn't just fall apart once we get it up, but... it's really exciting. That's going to be it for this particular episode, I think, because we just sort of like rambled off. If you have more commentary, feel free to leave it for us. Absurd comics, and can they last? Can they be original anymore? I don't know. Can the ones that are currently here, will they keep going, and will they still, or will they just turn into like South Park, where, yeah, it's offensive, but it's South Park. You know, it's whatever.
I'm sure South Park is kind of its own standard these days.
Yeah,
it's like I'm sure that there are like ways to be absurd that people will like, you know, reason out in the future. Like I'm sure like 10 years ago you could have this conversation, like, you know, like, oh my god, look at this dinosaur comic where it's just the same, like, you know, dinosaurs every week with new dialogue added. Like, will we ever be able to will this kind of like absurd humor have a place in the future?
There's been a lot of people that have tried to do that, and it just is terrible. Honestly, a lot of them are just terrible.
Yeah, that's it. It's like you can't riff off somebody else's success. You have to, like, pave your own way, find a new way of thinking to make it work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's, speaking, like, sort of like the cut-paste sort of thing, we did have somebody on the show a long time ago, just to quickly mention this, where basically all the, so to speak, comic were avatars, and the avatars would change a little bit based on what they were saying, It was Avatar. It was Avatar combined with basically text about what, and they're having a conversation. And I do really forget what it was called, and I do apologize about that. But a lot of people equated it to almost as though an IM conversation. Even though
that was actually a really common way, like back in, you know, the early days of the internet, I saw a lot of like not quite fan fictions written like that. But, it, you know, it was like basically a fan fiction format that a lot of people use where they'd have like Avatar, you know, it's like this one's Sailor Moon and this one's Tuxedo Mask. And it'd be like, you know, they'd write out their fan fiction sort of in like script format like that. And
I've seen that.
I wish I could figure out
what it was. I really just went dead after I said that.
Anyway.
I've seen that. Awkward silence.
It wasn't that long.
Also, Jules, I think Terra Italian is trying to get a hold of you about a coloring project.
Yeah. She got a hold of me, and we got to talking about stuff. And, there's some discussions going on.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I mean, I was talking to her. I was like, hey, whatever happened to that color idea thing? Because I remember back when I actually tried to color, like, I think the first page of chapter two for her. And I had
somebody trying to color a bit of Galaxian.
Yeah. The biggest issue was I was really fine coloring all the characters and everything, but trying to figure out what the hell the color of the ship is supposed to be. It's like, wait a minute, what? I have no idea. So I went through like a zillion different styles, but it was fun. Anyway. Because I need
more. Man, I'm super excited because there's this big comic thing that I was commissioned to do like forever ago that's just been like sitting on the shelf, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to finish like at least one page of it today.
Was that the one you promised your boyfriend that you'd be doing?
Yep.
I've seen pages of this thing. It is pretty amazing.
It's totally like every time that I have spare time to work on it, I work on it, but it's slow going. But I'm pretty sure this page is going to get done today. And I think it's one of the more complicated ones because it's like a chase scene with a whole bunch of characters.
Awesome.
Again, I can tell you guys, this thing, if it ever gets out, is amazing. You're going to love it.
Don't overhype it. All right.
You might like it, maybe. I guess. I don't know.
All right. That is going to be it for this episode of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com, part of the Webcast Beacon Network. I do want to thank Kelly Turnbull for being here with me this week because Mark Savory didn't show up. Mark. But also for Jules Rivera for coming back once more on the show, making this appearance number 6. And we'll have to get you on a few more times if you want to be the number one frequent guest on the Webcomic Beacon.
I am a competitive person.
Yes. People do like hearing you on the show.
I'm always down to talk to Jules more.
All right, once again, Jules Rivera from ValkyrieSquadron.com. Good luck on figuring out and remembering how to spell Valkyrie and Squadron correctly. I'm just giving you shit. I'll put a link in the show notes there. And Kelly from... Mark's not here. He's thrown off all the signing out procedure.
Am I supposed to say goodbye?
I've been festivartracomic.com.
So you'll just have to work it out on your own. Mark from Autumn Lake. That was kind of close, wasn't it? No, that was lame. Never mind.
All right. All right. Show's end. Are there any, like, soap opera webcomics?
Well, it depends on what you call a soap opera. A lot of comics have a lot of melodrama and soap opera feel to it.
Yeah, but, like, soap opera is more so, it's like, specifically, how can we get more drama out of this?
See, ta-da! Soap opera webcomics are called Marvel and DC. They don't even need to be webcomics. It's just, you know, you've got this cast of characters that they have to, like, keep alive because everybody loves them, and they just, you know... trying to come up with like 70 years of story for like the same little cast and not letting them go.
Yeah, if I stop and try to think about X-Men canon with, like, Jean Grey and how many times she died, and now Scott's running off to the blonde lady, but then they had a kid, but that kid was really a clone from the future who was really another kid, and then Cable shows up and he's got huge beefy arms. And
then but only one of them's a real arm because he has some sort of virus, some incurable disease.
Okay, you talk
from the
about.
Future.
No, he has the disease of the 90s. That's his problem.
He's got Liefeld's disease.
And the most
my feet are juice ball.